This is Morning Edition on KACU. I'm Heather Claiborne. Texans have begun to cast early ballots for the midterm election. Voters in Taylor, Nolan, and Jones counties are choosing between incumbent Stan Lambert and his challenger Sam Hatton for their representative in the Texas House. Lambert is finishing his first term representing the 71st District, and he joins me now. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
I want to hear from you. What do you think the most important issues of this election are, and what are you hearing when you talk to voters?
I think the thing that's going to drive the discussion in the next legislative session will be education. I think education issues were something that were at the forefront in the last session, but there weren't enough compromises, you might say, made between the House and the Senate to move forward with a very strong reform of our current funding situation in Austin. So I think education will be the number one topic when we get back down there.
For listeners that aren't paying close enough attention to the news or what's happening in Austin, what is the current state of the funding for schools, rural versus more wealthy school districts and all of that type of thing?
If your school districts are growing, if they're adding enrollment, then their funding is increasing every year. If you're in a rural area and your enrollment obviously is either maintaining or declining, then your funding is not increasing. It's staying relatively stable. What has happened also is that over the last several years, the state of Texas has decreased the level of state investment and has transferred a lot of the funding responsibility to local taxpayers. So that shift and that difference in the burden of where the funding actually comes from is another major topic that we'll need to address.
What do you see your ability to address that issue? I mean, are you able to have conversations with other rural representatives that want to work with you on this?
Absolutely. I think the rural representatives are probably the most in line with wanting to do something very significant in terms of reform. What's happened over the last 20 years is the funding mechanism has really just been a series of Band-Aids that have been applied. There's never been a real serious discussion about how we reform the entire funding of education to make it more equitable so that our rural schools are getting the adequate funding that they need, as well as our larger school districts that are growing as well. So I think that's going to be a major issue. Funding is always going to be a problem mm-hmm. in the state of Texas because we have a conservative philosophy now that we don't want to grow our budget or we don't want to grow the government. So we deal with a limited amount of money every time that we meet, and we have to reprioritize each session. The last session received a tremendous amount of new funding for child protective services and mental health programs. And so every 2 years, the legislature will look at what are the highest priorities. I believe education will be one of those high priorities that will get a good, strong look this year. I think school safety is another issue and a topic that has been brought up over the last 6 or 7 months. The governor, as you know, has had roundtable discussions with administrators, families that were affected in the Santa Fe High School shooting, and others, school district officials, and legislators to really come up with a list of possible solutions. He came up with 40 different recommendations. I think we'll see some of those recommendations enacted in this next legislative session. And it's not just about the physical structure of the schools, like we call hardening of the campuses. It's also about mental health resources, about giving our counselors more freedom to interact with students, getting them out of just testing and accountability issues that they seem to have inherited over the last decade or 15 years, and giving them more opportunity to really get to know their students, to get them know them on a level in which they could possibly help determine if there is an issue or a mental health issue that needs to require additional counseling. So I think we're going to see some activity there as far as the legislative process in the very first few weeks of the next session.
Do you think the school marshal approach to school safety is a real important or key aspect of preventing future gun violence in schools?
I think it's one of the tools. I think that we need to be open-minded to an assortment of tools to make sure that every district looks at what's best for their community, what works really well. You know, up in the Panhandle, some of our school districts are 40 or 50 miles away from first responders. And so if there is a active shooter situation occurring on their campus, those school districts may decide that, you know, it's okay for teachers to carry on a voluntary basis. They may be the best first line of defense before those first responders could do. That wouldn't work in Houston, Texas, or that wouldn't work in some of our larger metropolitan areas. So I think it's got to be done on a basis of let each school district, let each community look at what is best for them. What does their communities feel like is important? Whether it's adding more school marshals, giving more like veterans and former active military, even possible, just a way in which to come on campus and just walking down the halls and walk around the sidewalks, just to give more of a feeling of security and safety for those students. I think there are a lot of different ways in which we can look at strengthening the schools and making them more safe and secure. So I wouldn't want to say any one thing is the answer. There are a lot of different things that are being looked at, but I think those will be some things that will be discussed in the upcoming session.
It sounds like you're saying flexibility needs to be
Absolutely.
Part of the approach.
Absolutely.
Now, a federal report did blast Texas on delivery of services to students with special needs. What's happened on this issue? What do you see coming up in 2019?
Well, years ago, there was kind of an arbitrary cap placed on school districts around the state. It wasn't a mandate, but it was somewhat of a directive that said, look, we need to get your special needs student populations down to about 8.5% to 9%. So a lot of school districts started making decisions about how they were going to treat special needs students. They tried to do inclusion where those students were brought back into the regular classroom. And so I have some experience with that because my wife was a principal at one of our local elementary schools. And so I always listened to her, how she was dealing with that particular issue of some of the special need students that were in her district. But I think those are going to be some things that we're going to need to really look hard at and address to ensure that we're meeting the federal requirements. We don't want that funding to go away, but we want to make sure that we're doing it in what's best for each kid and making sure that we look at decisions based on through the lens of a child's eyes.
And some other court challenges involve SB4, which took effect earlier this year. It allows police officers to ask people for their immigration status during lawful stops. Do you expect the state legislature to revisit SB4 in the coming session? Are there other bills on immigration that you're advocating or looking at?
I think SB4 was the right move for the state to take in lieu of the fact that we had in light of the fact that we had some cities that were basically just ignoring the federal law. They weren't turning in some of the hardened criminals that were in their jails and in their civil criminal justice system back over to the federal authorities. And so something had to be done to ensure that our local governments, our local municipalities were following the federal law. That's why the Sanctuary Cities Bill, SB4, was enacted. I don't anticipate that there were a lot of problems or have been a lot of problems. I'm not hearing anything as far as a lot of inappropriate stops where detainees are being asked what their status is. It does give local law enforcement that authority to go that far in determining what their status is, but it was not intended to be used for that purpose. So it's really more about trying to make sure that the hardened criminals, the ones that are really dangerous to our society, are not released back into the system. So that's why Sanctuary Cities Bill, SB4, was passed. So it was a very confrontational bill, obviously, a very difficult emotional bill to work on, but I think it was something that was needed, and the state of Texas stepped forward and made that decision to move forward.
One of the top issues for many voters is health care. In a report released in January, Texas received a D- for rural health care specifically. Researchers at Texas Tech University's F. Murray Hall Institute for Rural and Community Health ranked Texas 36th out of 47 states. They looked at mortality and quality of life and access to care. Among other factors, the researchers cited high rates of death from heart disease and stroke in rural areas. So is Texas working on improving health care, especially for people in more rural areas?
I think we are. I think we're looking at ways in which we can use telehealth and telemedicine in some of our rural communities in order to make sure that access and affordability is certainly available. So I do think that there are some things moving in that direction. The fact that Texas did not accept Medicaid expansion, that Texas voted not to become so involved in Medicaid that we would ultimately have to fund that eventually, was a decision obviously made years ago, but it certainly has put pressure on a lot of our rural areas and the rural communities. A lot of doctors just simply do not want to move and live in those communities. So we've got to make sure that at least we're thinking outside the box, that we're looking at telehealth and telemedicine as possible ways to provide basic diagnostic services and make sure that some of that health care is provided expeditiously and in an affordable way. More serious type health issues probably are going to need to be transported or transferred to a larger regional area like Abilene or Midland or Wichita Falls. But we need to make sure that we're not creating more obstacles to ensure that those rural residents are not getting the adequate treatment they need.
A few years ago, the state had focused, as you mentioned earlier, on improving services for children in the system, and they increased pay and some training and mentoring and that type of thing. Those that I have spoken with inside the system say they're thankful for those changes. What else do you think needs to be done to make sure that the state is really paying attention to the needs of children in the system?
I think we just need to continue to make sure that the steps that were taken in the last session to reform and basically restructure the entire Child Protective Services area of our state was really significant. And I think we'll be watching and looking for new data as it evolves to see, number one, have we been able to reduce the amount of turnover and the number of caseworkers? Are those caseworkers being more effective in terms of lowering the amount of caseload that they're carrying down to what I think is the prescribed amount of about 17 or 18 cases to one caseworker? What we're doing is we front-loaded a system that really needed a lot of help on the front end. I think we're going to be looking at what happens on the back end as far as the judiciary mm-hmm. System and just as far as placement and foster care and what areas we can do to help improve as well. So it was kind of an understanding that this was not a one-fix-all type solution, that it was going to take two or three legislative sessions to really look at the information, the data that comes back, and then make some more decisions that will help ensure that our children are protected and they're safe.
People who work with the elderly are now saying that they would like to see some investment similar to that given to CPS workers. They want that same attention. Do you think that Texas should be looking at increasing funding and pay for the people on the other end of caring for vulnerable residents?
Absolutely. I think our adults should be treated just as fairly and justly as anyone else in our communities. The children obviously are our probably number one concern, but adults certainly are. Our seniors need to be elevated to that level of importance and make sure that we are doing what we can. Funding is always going to be an issue, and as I said in the last session, we prioritize funding in some other areas where we asked various agencies to make 4% to 6% to some as many as 10% cuts in their budgets so that we would have funding available to restructure and reform CPS and to make sure that mental health was addressed in this next over this next biennium. So I think the adult care and making sure that our adults are giving the services and the programs they need to make sure that they're maintained in a safe and secure environment is going to be another topic that we'll be taking up in the next session.
Texas is a big state, a wide variety of landscapes and climates and weather-related problems from hurricanes to drought and wildfire. Is Texas paying enough attention to questions surrounding the environment?
I think that we're certainly going to address the problems that occurred. Hopefully the hurricane that hit the coast back in August of last year is not a reoccurring event. It's a one-time event, hopefully, that we would not be seeing again in the next 100 years or so. But we're going to take care of those folks on the coast. We've got $12 billion in our rainy day fund, the Economic Stabilization Fund. I think if anyone could proclaim that this was a rainy day, then yes, I think this would be an appropriate use of those funds to make sure that those residents are taken care of. But that also leads into a lot of other questions about reservoirs, about mm-hmm. Making sure that we've got adequate flood control in certain areas of the state, particularly around the Houston area. I know that got devastated not just because of the rain, but because of the way in which the Army Corps of Engineers released water because they had to. And so this really has generated another round of studies of making sure that we've got adequate drainage, that we've got adequate supply as well. But at the same time, we're going to be looking at ways to try to curtail some of that problem if it ever did occur again. So, yes, I think it goes hand in hand with not just helping the recovery that occurred, but also making sure that we do some better planning and prevention for future hurricanes and dramatic situations like that.
And in this area, a lot of the questions really in the environment revolve more around water use rights mm-hmm. and problems with wildfire prevention and, mm-hmm. and that type of thing. So is that a priority? I mean, is anybody paying attention to that in Austin, or is that something that is kind of on the back burner?
I know our ranchers and our farmers are very concerned about that. At the same time, they're very concerned about property rights and making sure that eminent domain and other things that government has used in the past as a last resort, but certainly that those things aren't becoming more of a norm as opposed to an exception. But I do think that those things will be looked at. We're looking at brush control. We're looking at ways to eliminate and reduce the potential for devastation that could be caused by wildfire activity. Certainly it's something that's important to this area of the state, but it's something that goes hand in hand with just overall conservation and preservation of our natural resources. So I think it's something that we'll be looking at on a continuous basis.
And have you been hearing from ranchers and farmers about how, you know, they're perceiving their outlook into the coming years with current environmental policies or just the state of the weather patterns?
I think so. I think nobody wants to necessarily take any suggestions from California. But I think if you look at California and see what the situation has occurred there with all the wildfire activity, a lot of that could have been prevented with better control, brush control as far as intermittent fires and taking care of that. I think we'll be looking at a lot of different ways to do that, but we're not just necessarily going to be adopting just exactly what California and some of the other states do. I think we'll be looking at more of a Texas solution to how we work with ranchers and farmers to make sure that their resources are maintained, but at the same time that we're not having to expend a lot of other state resources or county resources when these situations do arise. So I think it goes hand in hand.
My last question for you, why should the 71st District send you to Austin for a second term?
I would just summarize it as experience, leadership, and results. I think I have the experience due to the fact that I grew up here in Abilene. This is my hometown. I'm very passionate about the culture that we have here, that we've created, the things that are moving forward in terms of our community and what's happening in our rural areas as well. I think I have the leadership based on the fact that I have served on a school board for 10 years. I've been chairman of that school board for 6 of those 10 years. I've been a mayor of a small community. I've worked in higher education. My wife has been in public education for a number of years, so I think the leadership qualities and then the results. We went to Austin in our first term. We passed 11 out of our 13 proposed issues and legislation. It wasn't all authored by me, but it was carried by another bill or another author of a different type of legislation. But the theme of what we were trying to get done was successful. So I think that one of those was our hotel tax here in Abilene. In order to give our city of Abilene the opportunity at least to try to work with a developer to build a downtown hotel. Another was our rural communities bill, which helped cities like Sweetwater protect themselves against state agencies who might enact a new rule or regulation that would have a detrimental negative impact on their economy. So we did some things that were basically our district wanted us to work on, and we delivered those promises and we kept our promises. So I think those are the three reasons why I would ask people to continue to support me.
Well, Representative Lambert, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Stan Lambert is the representative for the 71st Texas House District running for re-election to a second term. This is KACU. I'm Heather Claiborne.